insurance industry is the backbone of the economy. It's the reason we're able to take risks, and it's the force that helps put us all back together when disaster strikes. So in this podcast, I'll be spending some quality time with key CEOs and leaders to ask them how certain world events can impact the insurance industry, and how the insurance industry is impacting the world. We'll also be talking about how they rose to the C-suite. It seems like people either fall into insurance almost by accident, or they've been pursuing a deliberate path to the industry. Our guest today is an example of the latter. Wait till you hear him describe the insurance industry as exciting and cool. I'm Meg Green, managing editor of the online insurance magazine Insider Engage, and this is CEO Perspectives. Insurance can be complicated, and our next guest says that is one factor fueling the growth in the specialist or excess and surplus lines market. Joel Cavanis is president of Risk Placement Services, a company he co-founded 26 years ago. RPS is one of the largest U.S. wholesale brokers, managing general agents, and program managers, and part of Arthur J. Gallagher & Company. Wholesale insurance brokers are the link between the retail insurance agent and an excess and surplus, or E&S insurer. E&S insurers specialize in underwriting complicated risks that often do not fit in the standard or admitted market, meaning E&S insurers want to be able to adjust their rates, terms, and conditions quickly if necessary, which can be difficult to do in the standard or admitted market. Business is booming in the E&S world. Its premiums grew for the fourth straight year in 2022, rising 20% to $76 billion. This business can include high-risk exposures ranging from a home in a catastrophe-prone area to a multinational oil company. RPS has nearly 3,000 employees working in 80 offices, but Joel leads the company from its home office in bucolic-sounding Rolling Meadows, Illinois. Joel, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks, Meg. I really look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. And where are you calling in from now?
So today I am in the suburbs of Chicago. It's a beautiful spring, nice, crisp, clear day. And so kind of the Chamber of Commerce day for Chicago.
Great. So, you know, we often hear people fall into the insurance industry or they're born into it. So I think you're in that latter category. Is that right?
I am. I grew up in the industry. When I was very, very young, my father bought an insurance agency in a small town about 350 miles south of Chicago. And I spent my youth watching him work, how he did it, the excitement that he got in selling insurance, and it was great.
What were your first impressions of the insurance industry as a child?
I guess, you know, as a child, you really don't necessarily understand the nuances of insurance, of course. But, my impression was that my father enjoyed going to work every day. And he enjoyed what he did. He provided very well for his family. My mom was, of course, a school teacher, but she was always involved in the business side. So I saw how the kind of in a community, how all that kind of interacts. And when you watch somebody who never complained about work, enjoyed work, wanted to go to work, wanted to do what he was doing, you know, I think that's a favorable impression on you.
And did you get into insurance right after college?
Right after college, I joined an insurance organization, part of Crum & Forster. Fortunately for me, they had a really good training program. It was very scripted on what the expectations were, what the time frames were, what was going to happen when you quote-unquote became an underwriter. It was fast-paced because they expected you to become an underwriter within 6 months, so there was intense training. That was maybe a little bit of a different time, but really a great career path for me personally.
That was, 1983 when you first started?
Whew, long time ago, 1983. Yes, it was, the insurance industry at the time really was kind of almost, call it transformational, because we were in the height of a soft market, cash flow underwriting, interest rates were really high. A lot of things were going on. Of course, today we have data that we can better predict what's going to happen back then. It was all 100% rearview mirror, and a lot of people got into a lot of trouble during those times. People were looking to really not make underwriting profit, but they would take all the premium dollars that they were able to sit on until the losses were actually paid years later or months later or whatever, and the investment income would make up a significant portion of the profits.
And as you said, you can run into trouble doing that. And I think you had a front seat to that on your second job. Is that right?
I certainly did. Yeah, when people were doing a lot of cash flow underwriting, if you continue to cut prices in a competitive environment, and then, of course, if your investments don't turn out or the interest rates go down, you can get upside down in a pretty quick way, which did happen to me in my second job. Of course, as I said, it was a turbulent time, and a lot of insurance companies were making a lot of changes and a lot of moves. And so I needed to change my job. And I went to work for Mission Insurance Company. And my very first day reporting there, the Wall Street article headline was that Mission Insurance Company was insolvent on a GAAP basis. And things didn't get any better from there. And that lasted a total of about 16 months. And then it was kind of forced to move on.
And then you joined Gallagher?
I did. That was an interesting move. At that point in 1986, Gallagher was really one of the ones that, if you looked at the Business Insurance list of top insurance brokers, you would say they would not be here some 37 years later, certainly not in the position that we are in today. And it's been just an awesome ride for me personally, and of course the company and the shareholders, to go from an organization that was only doing $80 million of revenue back then to $8 billion is certainly an exciting journey.
Did you learn any lessons from that experience with the company that went under?
I do, and I actually share that with young people. I tell them, I'm like, you need to do your due diligence. If you're going to connect your career to any company, look at their past, look at where they're going in the future, make sure that they are financially sound, and make sure that they have a game plan for growth, because growth provides for opportunity. If the company's not growing, it's standing still, they don't realize it, but they're actually going backwards. And so I think, mine was a little bit of luck and timing, that I needed a job, of course. And over time, as I looked at the organization, looked at the things that Gallagher was doing, investing, buying other firms, merging, had a successful merger history, it became apparent that there was a lot of opportunity here. And so that's kind of, and of course, loyalty is a two-way street. And I've always been loyal, and they've been loyal to me. And so when I give people advice, I'm like, look, make sure that you're hitching your career to an organization that has growth minded.
And tell me about what made you start Risk Placement Services. What was your inspiration?
I think that, looking back, and we just celebrated our 26th year in business, and we started it from scratch. I had moved to Chicago from St. Louis to take over a marketing operation that kind of had some aspirations of being a wholesaler. Wholesale is a lot about talent, and when I view the talent that was part of this marketing operation, I really knew that it wasn't the right kind of talent that could actually be a successful wholesaler. We continued to operate that business, and over time we melded it into RPS. But when we were looking at the landscape of other organizations in our space, they all had wholesale operations. Certainly Aon had Sweat, Marsh had Crump, and on and on and on. Willis had Stuart Smith. And we were really the only large insurance organization that didn't have a wholesale arm. And so it was really something that we looked at and said, this is something that we need to be in. And so one early morning, Monday morning in 1997, we ended up hiring four people in downtown Chicago, And on Tuesday morning, we were in the wholesale business. I wish it was that simple, because obviously there was a lot of work involved in it. But that, in a very simplistic way, that was it.
What do you like about the wholesale business?
I love the creativity. I love the ability to match risk with a proper risk taker, and the proper, of course, the proper, hopefully the proper price, hopefully the proper terms. Our ability in the E&S side to have the freedom of rate and form, I think is just an exciting place. So we kind of say there's really nothing that you can't insure because of the marketplace and the appetite, people's willingness to be open and listen to the situation at hand, and that's exciting. You know, there's not a lot of parts of the industry that where you get that creativity. So it is about being creative, people who have a lot of energy, people who get excited about the industry. That excites me. It's fun, and I think really more than anything else, I guess fun is a right place to be.
There's really nothing you can't insure?
Well, I mean, I guess nobody wants to insure a burning building, but, you know, they might be willing to do it for the right price. I've never tried. Hopefully, I never will. But, you know, generally, yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, if you really dig deep into our industry, and I was with a person that I've known for a long time last week, they insure professional baseball players. That's their specialty. And they insure them for disability, for their contracts, and all this kind of thing. You know, people talk about the old adage of, you know, people insuring legs and eyes, and you can do that. There are markets that do all those kind of what we would call crazy things. But, you know, there's knowledgeable people who understand it, understand, again, the nuances, and that's fun. I mean, if you think about that, that's just fun.
And, you know, Lloyd's is really known for insuring some of those very specific, like somebody's legs, or I know they did a sommelier's nose. And you're a very large Lloyd's cover holder.
We are. We spend a lot of time in Lloyd's. I'll be there in just a few weeks. I enjoy being in that marketplace because it is the historical value of just going to the Lloyd's building, looking at the bell, looking at all the old books. And talking about, you know, the history, how it started, how it developed, how it grew. I actually didn't know this. I was in Lloyd's not too long ago, and they were talking about why is somebody called an underwriter? And if you go back in history, on ships, underneath the cargo, they would write who was insuring it, so it was underwritten. And that's really some of the historical things that I enjoy. I think it's just fun.
Would you have any examples of the most unusual thing you've insured?
We've insured the King Tut exhibit that was moving from city to city. That was very complicated. You know, it had to be certain amounts of security. There had to be certain amounts of protection, of course. And that was just sitting down and talking with the people who were doing the logistics and all of the protections that they took in the movement of certainly archaeology, all the things that went into it to protect it, you know, because of the historical significance of that, was really interesting. We also, during, of course, some of the unfortunate events of 9/11, made things, because of the time, very difficult to insure, and we happened to insure the Sears Tower in downtown Chicago. We spent a lot of time with the owners and the underwriters, all coming together in one room to really figure out exactly what we were going to do, how the protections, the inside, and why that particular structure was very different than other structures, the way it was made. The way that it was secured, and all the things that happened behind the scene where they can see people from blocks away before they get there. So it was just really a time where it was interesting, because I don't know that I necessarily have been in that kind of a situation that brought everybody into the same room to solve a problem.
That's a great example. That incident really changed the industry, didn't it? It got companies to solidify their forms and policies sooner rather than later.
It did. And I think, you know, we see that in other things that are going on today, where maybe not everything is always contemplated in the insurance business, kind of like the conflict in the Ukraine. And of course, the most recent pandemic certainly turned everything upside down on its ear. Who knows what's next?
If there was anything you could change about the insurance industry, what would it be?
It would be great if we could make the industry simpler. If you read a policy form or go through the process, it's just extraordinarily complicated. And that's why I believe that the insurance industry has evolved into specialists, because being able to navigate very complicated insurance language and terms and conditions and why this is that and blah, 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 takes a specialist. And that's why it's really gone from a generalist industry to a very specialized industry where people in today's environment might only work on one line, one very specific line of business or an industry specific, because it is complicated and it's difficult to navigate, and you need to have very talented people be able to do that, because that's what the industry is all about. You're buying a future promise.
Is that part of the driver of the growth in the MGA, MGU space? That's a managing general agent and managing general underwriter. You see such specialized companies popping up now.
Yeah, again, it's all centered around the talent of the people associated with the MGAs and the MGUs. They bring a particular expertise that a risk-taking partner may want to venture into. And of course, if you're going to give your authority out to somebody, you better give it to someone who knows what they're doing and know very specifically what they're doing. Because that's a big fiduciary responsibility when you underwrite on behalf of your capital provider. You're basically putting them at risk on potentially large exposed events. And I do believe that having that talent, if you can't go out and effectively buy it or hire it, I suppose, then you kind of rent it. And some of the capital providers are very interested in renting that talent to assume that kind of risk and find it. And of course, again, risk finds talent. That's what we do.
Coming full circle to our earlier discussion about cash flow underwriting, a number of companies blew up from what they called a giving away the pen, right? They gave too much authority to outside parties. And when the unprofitable business came home to roost, you had companies fail like Reliance, Frontier, or two of the big names. I know there are more. Is there a danger of that happening again?
You know, I think that people are a little bit smarter today, maybe a little bit more educated on the pitfalls and the things that they need to watch for, the audits that go on out there. The way that the reinsurance is structured is so vitally important, because when people are given out their authority, and if they go beyond the level of authority that they have, reinsurers tend to get very upset. And that's really what caused a lot of the early problems were that reinsurers said, well, wait a minute, this wasn't part of the deal. So they tend to sit on the cash and go into arbitration or refuse to pay because it wasn't contemplated, all those different factors. And those are the things that really disturb carriers, because they may not have that kind of cash flow to be able to pay the claim, but their name is on the insurance policy and they are obligated to pay that claim if it's covered. I would just tell you better find the best underwriter with the best financial backing. I would want somebody who has the financial wherewithal to be there for the long term.
So Joel, I know you're a golfer. What do you enjoy about that sport?
first of all, of course, it's a great great opportunity to be, you know, spend 4 hours or whatever it takes outdoors. But, you know, it's interesting. I think the thing that I like about golf the most is the challenge that you're never going to truly master it. You could tell a lot about a person on the golf course, how they interact. You do learn a lot about people's character.
Is what you said about golf true about the insurance industry as well? It's you'll never actually master it. Do you think you can master the insurance industry?
I'm not sure anybody's mastered it either. There's been some that have done exceedingly well. Those are the ones that pay attention to all those details, just like golf. You know, which way the wind's blowing, is it uphill, is it downhill? What club should you pull out to actually hit the shot, to execute on it? Like golf, the winds can change, the weather can change, all those kind of things, just like insurance. It could be the government. It could be global warming. It could be the way that social inflation impacts. It could be inflation in general. So there's so many different things that need to be considered in the insurance industry that impacts the macro part of the industry.
Joel, you've had such a great career in the industry, so many decades. What do you like best about the insurance industry?
You know, I think that the need, I suppose, is one of the things that I like. I think, again, if you step back away and you really look at a global economy and you have to have the insurance industry to have an economy, at least in capitalistic markets, because people won't do business with you if you don't have insurance. Would you go to a doctor, if you didn't have medical malpractice insurance, or a hospital, or whatever it might be? The industry plays such an important role in the economy, and without it, you really couldn't have that. And so, you know, that kind of makes it fun. It makes it cool. It's something that is required. It's ever changing. So it's just sometimes I know from an insurance geek perspective, people are like, yeah, really? But I just find it fascinating.
Great. Joel, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed our conversation. Look forward to the next time, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your year.
In this episode, I learned why Joel Cavanaugh loves the insurance industry so much that he describes it with words like cool, exciting, and fun. From insuring the King Tut exhibit to the Sears Tower, E&S insurers have to be creative, he says. I also appreciate his optimism that there is nothing you can't insure. For more information on E&S insurance, please visit our website, insiderengage.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell your friends. And you can register on our website to be notified of future episodes when we'll speak to another industry leader to share their insight and their story of how they rose to the C-suite. Thanks to Joel Cavanaugh for sharing his story with us today, for our producer Richard Myron at Earshot Strategies for always making us sound good, and my Delinian colleagues Celine Frost, Kareem Magiro, Michelle Heatherly, Emma May, Goran Pancik, and Pierre Agabala for their help and support. For Insider Engage, I'm Meg Green.